We are back on the Andy Finn Show on WEVR, and today is March 17th, St. Paddy's Day. It's also the birthday of Bobby Jones, 1902. Bobby Jones is one of the greatest golfers in the history of the game, and it's fitting we should mention it here because I don't spend too much time on golf, but Tiger Woods won another tournament. He is on a streak. I think he's won the last seven PGA tournaments he's been in. He's undefeated this year. That is, he hasn't entered a tournament and lost yet in the 2008 season. That's unheard of. No, that never happens to anyone. I mean, Nicholas, anybody. He is shattering all records in golf, and within a couple of years will not only be have people claiming he's the greatest golfer in the history of the game, he will own all the records to prove it. And on this day in 1959, the Dalai Lama fled Tibet and went to India on March 17th, 59. That's how long China has been occupying Tibet. Of course, if you keep up with the news, you know that it was in the news over the past few days. Just three, 4 days ago, China started a crackdown. There were protests in Tibet. And, of course, the problem with the China has with the Dalai Lama, when Bush received him at the White House, or he had went to Capitol Hill last year, the Chinese were miffed. In fact, they retaliated by not letting one of our aircraft carriers dock in Hong Kong, even though families of the people on the aircraft carrier had flown in from Japan and elsewhere to meet their loved ones. China, at the last minute, turned our aircraft carrier away because they were unhappy with how we were cozying up to the Dalai Lama. He's a reminder that they are occupying Tibet, and they want to annex Tibet and claim it as their own. That's what they have done. But as long as the Dalai Lama is out there, they're in trouble. So it's interesting that it was, let's see, what did I say, 59. So 49 years ago today that the Lama was on the loose. Let's come back now to Barack Obama's preacher, the Reverend Jeremiah Johnson. Now, the other thing worth noting is that he's basically a Christian preacher on the right who is saying intemperate things, and of course, on the left, and we've had intemperate preachers on the right. The litany of things they've said is almost too long to go through. I don't have to go way back to Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson. Basically, they say America is damned or cursed by God because of our tolerance of gay people. And because of our tolerance of feminism, they don't say gay people, they say homosexuality, and that women don't know their place, and that feminism has gotten out of control. You know, they blame 9/11 or hurricanes on those things. But we don't even have to go back to those two. John Hagee is supporting John McCain this year, and basically he says that America is damned or cursed by God. And he claims that it's because we are tolerant of Muslims. He's been pretty intolerant of Muslims. He's been intolerant of Catholics and doesn't think much of the Catholic religion. So what's interesting with these preachers on the right, they basically are upset with tolerance of certain groups, that we shouldn't tolerate certain kinds of behavior among humans. Right? Well, what is Jeremiah Wright saying? Okay, he's not saying that America is damned, that America is cursed by God because of a tolerance of certain groups. He's saying that it's the hate that there is out there for different groups, the division, the bitterness that is causing us to be damned. Okay? Now, you can disagree with him, but seen in context, I have to tell you, I come down closer to his side than I do Falwell and Robertson and Hagee. But, you know, Hagee's gotten a pass. Now, he's not John McCain's preacher. But then again, I don't know if you've ever had a preacher, or in my case, a priest. But when I listen to a priest give a sermon, I don't agree with everything they say. And I don't have to defend what they say just because I go to that church. And just because Obama respects this preacher, it doesn't mean he has to agree with everything he says. But they're trying to tar him with the views of this guy. And they're not looking too carefully these days at Hagee's comments or the comments of the preachers on the right. So we'll have to see where this goes, but let's hear another clip of Jeremiah Wright's. This one's his first sermon the Sunday after 9/11 about essentially that America's culpability in the attacks, which drives the right crazy. They don't want to hear a discussion that there may have been blowback, as the CIA says, that our policies over decades might be somewhat responsible for how people react to us. And yet, how could it be otherwise? Right? If you're going to take responsibility for what goes on in the world, you have to believe that you're in control, that what you do matters, and that what, if you change what you do, you can get a different reaction from people. If you don't believe that, if you say, oh, they're in control, like terrorists are in control, and that's kind of the Republican message, that they're out to get us, and woe is us if we don't kill them, because they're in control. No. How we react to the world determines how they react to us. And I don't know why people don't get that. It's certainly true. Anybody that understands personal responsibility gets that. It's power. Personal responsibility is power. You get to control how life goes. Anyway, let's listen to Jeremiah Wright, the former preacher at Barack Obama's church in Chicago, the week after 9/11.
We bombed Hiroshima, we bombed Nagasaki, and we nuked far more than the thousands in New York and the Pentagon, and we never batted an eye. We have supported state terrorism against the Palestinians and black South Africans, and now we are indignant because the stuff we have done overseas is now brought right back into our own front yards. America's chickens are coming home to roost.
Now, Obama has disassociated himself from those comments. And I don't agree that with everything he said, meaning this idea that the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki in the context of World War II, it has to be seen in that context. All right? That is not what America would do today. There's no chance that an American president would drop a nuclear weapon today. I leave George Bush out of that equation because he doesn't understand history, and he's done some very strange things as president. But no normal American president will ever be the first to use a nuclear weapon. We don't need to. We've got such powerful weapons beyond that. Our moral authority won't allow us to drop a nuke. That's my take. And I know there are conservatives that are, oh, we should just bomb them to the Stone Age, you know, use the nukes. No, don't you get that that's not going to happen? And a lot of people don't. But what's interesting, and I don't agree with him necessarily about the Palestinians, okay? I think we have to strike a balance there. But you have to understand, if you're in a black church and you're listening to this preacher, the audience, you have to understand where they're coming from. The reason that blacks have more of an affinity for Palestinians than most of the rest of us is they see them as an oppressed people, as the Jews once were, and as we, and as blacks are, today in much of the world, but certainly in this country. And so they're more interested in variations on liberation theology, which is a term usually applied to South America, right? Bishops down there who preach that the people should have land reform and the people should have more money, more of the money, and the rich should have less of it. But the basic argument here that he's making about 9/11 is that our behavior in the world over the last several decades matters, and people form opinions about us. And basically, we're the big kid on the block. We get to say what we want to say, and we get to have our things our way much of the time, right? So, I mean, it's really kind of remarkable. If you step back and think about the situation in the Middle East, here we've been extracting oil out of the Middle East for our economy and for Western economy since the 1920s, or earlier, really. And then come 1948, the powers get together, particularly Britain, America, and France, and we carve out a little bit of territory and plop Israel down in the middle of the Middle East, and yet we want them to continue selling us their oil at a cheap price. And we want it from not just Saudi Arabia, but from a bunch of other countries. And our attitude about Israel is, well, look, there's claims on both sides. It goes back thousands of years. Let's give Israel this bit of land, and everybody will get over it, and they'll get along eventually. There may be problems for a while, but they'll get over it. Well, guess what? They haven't gotten over it. Right? It wasn't our place to give that land away, except we were the superpower after World War II. And our allies and us, we won the war. So we had the power to do it. I mean, what happens in the world comes out of sheer power. It's the exercise of power. But it's what's not so remarkable, you know, people always say, oh, the Palestinians, after 9/11, they cheered in the streets. Yeah, there were kids and ignorant people that just liked the idea of America getting its comeuppance or getting a black eye. They didn't think in terms of how many people died. They thought the system had been unfair for decades, and it was about time for some payback. They didn't think it through. And they're also at a different level of development. They're not at the same cultural level of development that we are. Check out Spiral Dynamics on Wikipedia or any place else and look at these levels of cultural development. And you'll see, you'll understand that the U.S. is a couple levels above a lot of third world countries. And we shouldn't expect them to have, as a culture or as a country or even individuals within it, we shouldn't expect the majority of the individuals to have the same mature reaction to events that we might have. So it shouldn't surprise us that there's unrest in the Middle East, or that there's a backlash against the U.S., or there's some dislike for the U.S., right? In fact, it's remarkable they're still selling us as much oil as they're selling us, right? And we've worked this out where Israel's this huge irritant for them, but we've got an arrangement whereby we get the oil we need for our economy. The West gets the oil it needs, and now China gets the oil it needs. I mean, we're lucky that it's set up that way. In the same way that if you look at the cultural situation, you know, people are complaining about Jeremiah Wright, Obama's former preacher, and his incendiary comments from the pulpit. But you know what's most amazing about the poor in this country and the blacks in this country? Is that the only time in my lifetime we've had rioting, any serious amount of rioting, was during the 60s in the civil rights movement. And it wasn't associated so much with the civil rights movement as it was just unrest in the cities. And we had race riots, as they called them at the time. And they mostly destroyed their own neighborhoods. But other than that, the poor in this country are actually pretty peaceful. They accept the inequality with an amazing amount of grace and good nature. And they live reasonably happy lives in spite of the misery. And they're not walking through the streets getting ready to decapitate the rich. And that's happened at different times in different societies over the millennia. That's what the French Revolution was about. Now, we should actually consider ourselves pretty lucky in this country. But when we see this kind of pent-up anger that Jeremiah Wright has, I'm not saying it's right, and I'm not saying forgive it, right? And Obama's right to distance himself from it. But I'd like to think that thoughtful people will stop and say, huh, I wonder what that's about. I wonder what's at the bottom of that. I wonder what can be done about that. We'll be back after this.
Well, you know my theory. It's the 20% of the people on the far right and 20% on the far left that are ruining this country for the rest of us. We deserve better.
The Andy Finn Show. Something special in the airwaves.
We deserve better. We deserve better.
Well, you do deserve better, but the good news is you're getting better. Welcome back to the Andy Finn Show on WEBR. By the way, you can go to my website at andyfinn.us. That's andyfinn.us, as in the United States, and read some of my writings, listen to old shows, hear my interviews with the dead or my parody songs. But meanwhile, we've got a live show right here, and we're talking about Jeremiah Wright, the bullfrog from Chicago. No, he's not a bullfrog. He's Barack Obama's former pastor. I think he was a pastor. He was a preacher anyway. And the right is up in arms and trying to tar Barack Obama with this because he's a pretty incendiary fellow. I'm going to play one more clip of the gentleman's and let him speak for himself about some of this.
Oh, I am
I'm so glad that I got a God who knows what it is to be a poor black man in a country and a culture that is controlled by and run by rich white people.
We have got to change the way we have been doing things as an arrogant, racist military superpower.
We believe God sanctioned the rape and robbery of an entire continent. We believe God ordained African slavery. We believe God makes Europeans superior to Africans.
Okay, I'm going to stop him there. Basically, he's making the argument that the way America has acted for 300 years is that God made us made white men superior, made Europe superior, and intended for the black man to be subsumed or to be slaves. And of course, the preachers, in Christian preachers, going back 350 years, actually made the case that this was the natural order of things, and that's what God intended. It isn't what Jeremiah Wright believes now. That is what's known as a rhetorical device. Let me let Jeremiah continue.
And superior to everybody else.
Yes, 9-1-1-0-1 happened to us, and so did slavery happen to us. Yes, the World Trade Center happened to us, and so did white supremacy happen to us. Yes, the Pentagon happened to us, and so did the Tuskegee experiment happen to us. Yes, Shanklin, Pennsylvania happened to us, and so did the Sharpsville massacre happen to us. A government-sponsored religiosity makes you suffer from amnesia.
I am sick of Negroes who just do not get it. Hillary was not a black boy raised in a single-parent home. Barack was. Barack knows what it means to be a black man living in a country and a culture that is controlled by rich white people. We cannot see how what we are doing is the same thing Al-Qaeda is doing under a different color flag, calling on the name of a different God to sanction and approve our murder and our...
Okay, so he's claiming that what we're doing is the same as what Al-Qaeda is doing. Now, that's going to rub a lot of people the wrong way, and I disagree with that. But let me try and see if I can put the best case forward. If Reverend Wright were here to explain it, and he was as articulate as I am, this might be what he would say. Well, it's true that you don't see America's use of military power as terrorism, and it's true that you don't intentionally behead people, and you don't intentionally kill women and children with suicide bombs. But let's look at the comparison, and let's look at the relative power. There isn't a lot of responses that the Palestinians can have or that Al-Qaeda can have, right? Now, the Palestinians have a goal. They want a country. Al-Qaeda doesn't seem to have a particular goal except to drive, I guess the original goal was to drive America out of Saudi Arabia, which, frankly, they have accomplished because President Bush quietly dismantled the 12 bases we had in Saudi Arabia post 9/11, and that was Osama bin Laden's main demand. Of course, that won't satisfy him. And that's not why Bush did it, but it's Al-Qaeda doesn't actually have an overarching strategic goal, as near as I can tell. But when it comes to matching our power, the reason people use a guerrilla warfare technique or suicide bombing or whatever it is they have at their disposal is they don't have another means of competing. If you go back to any war, people use whatever method they can. So in the Revolutionary War, we use guerrilla war tactics because it would have been suicide to face the British Army on the field of battle every time, trying to match them man for man, standing there in uniform and firing rows of muskets. It just, we couldn't possibly have won that way. In Vietnam, the Viet Cong couldn't possibly have won by fighting the way we fought. Right? We had the helicopters. We had the air power. We had the ability to bomb. They had to dig holes underground and hide and ambush us. Was that immoral in some way? We were napalming villages. We were dropping Agent Orange to kill the foliage. We poisoned a lot of people. That's the kind of thing that Reverend Wright is talking about. We tend to think back here in the U.S. that, well, we were defending democracy. We were trying to keep the communists from having one more domino fall. Right? So we feel justified by that. And he's saying, you have to step back and take a look at this. Now, my audience, you folks out there, I know that you don't listen to this show unless you're willing to have an open mind about some things. But do you think that most of the talk shows in America, most of the conservative talk shows, right-wing talk shows, people have an open mind? Heck, most of the left-wing talk shows, people don't have a very open mind because they tend to be 20%ers. But if you're going to have an open mind, if you're going to learn anything about the world, you have to be willing to suspend your set of beliefs and your lenses for the moment and say, okay, I'm not going to assume I know it all, like a Sean Hannity does, or a Rush Limbaugh, or a Michael Savage, or a Bill O'Reilly. And you got to be willing to step back and say, let me try and understand this other point of view. Not that they're right, but let's see where they're coming from. And where oppressed minorities are coming from is, we've been downtrodden a long time, and we don't have the ability to fight back on the level playing field. We don't have the same tools, the same weapons in the case of war, the same tools in the case of economic growth. So we have to fight by some other means. We have to get ahead by some other means in the case of economics. All right? So it shouldn't surprise us that there's a lot of pent-up anger out there about the success of the West, the success of America. Right? And it shouldn't surprise us when powerless people resort to extreme tactics to get their point across. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's acceptable. But we don't hold ourselves to account for very many of our behaviors. Right? In the 1990 Gulf War, we bombed Iraq, not back to the Stone Age, but pretty dang close. We bombed the infrastructure. We didn't do that in the second Gulf War. We bombed the bridges in Baghdad. We bombed the water supply. We bombed the electricity and knocked it all out. And there are various estimates, but pretty reputable estimates suggest that over 100,000 women and children died over the next few years because of unsanitary conditions, lack of safe drinking water, all of that. Now, who's responsible for that? Do we just say, well, that's just the cost of war? Or that Saddam was responsible because he should have done what we told him to do, and we wouldn't have bombed him? You know, at some point, you have to take responsibility for your actions. And so when Jeremiah Wright says that there's no difference between us and Al-Qaeda, I disagree with him. But if he wants to make a critique that says, look, there are a number of things the U.S. does that is the raw exercise of power, and we want our way and we don't care what gets in the way, there's some truth to that. And America needs to face up to that occasionally. You know, the whole idea of maturity in an individual is the ability to reflect on your behavior. And so the most mature people I know, the most well-adjusted people I know, the most successful people I know can all step back from a situation. They have some kind of a situation at the office or at work where they have a disagreement in a meeting and somebody gets hot under the collar, maybe it's them, and they say something and they threaten somebody or they get upset at somebody. They go home the next day. They go home that night and they think it over and they come back the next day and a big person might apologize. Or they might call the person they disagreed with into their office, or somebody that spoke out of turn and they lashed out at them or embarrassed them in public. They might call them in and say, hey, I'm sorry the way that went down yesterday. I was very upset, but you need to understand what I need out of this. So however you say it, it depends what the power situation is, who's the subordinate, who's the boss. But effective people are able to reflect on their behavior and make adjustments. Shouldn't we expect that as a country, a mature country like the United States, if we want to think of ourselves as a mature country that is going to wield all this power, shouldn't we be able to reflect on our own behavior? But we don't in this country. And I don't even have to go to 9/11 where the nerves are still pretty raw. And anytime someone says that we should look at why people are so angry, the Bill O'Reillys of the world all saying, oh yeah, blame America first. You know, it's, you want to say that we're responsible for 9/11. No, what we want to say is you're always better off looking at your own behavior because you can change your own behavior. You can't change the other guy's behavior. You can kill him, but you can't force him to do anything, at least not long term, not very easily, not without watching over every minute. So the choice is yours. Do you want to reflect on your behavior and see if you can produce a different result by changing how you approach somebody or something or some country? Or do you want to just bull ahead and not learn anything? We don't have to go to 9/11 and the aftermath of that where the nerves are still raw. We can go back to something like the Enola Gay incident about 10 years ago. The Smithsonian was getting ready to do an exhibit. I've talked about this before on this show. And when they wrote up an explanation that explained the Enola Gay dropped the first atomic bomb on Hiroshima and then we dropped one on Nagasaki and it ended World War II, but that there are people who argue that there would have been another way to do it. I've always thought since I was a little kid, and I first heard about this, why didn't we just drop an atomic bomb like on Mount Fuji or something and blast the mountain away to show them the power of it and saved 100,000 lives, civilian lives? But when they said that there's a debate about it, and some people think we shouldn't have dropped the bomb, people came out of the woodworks, a lot of them veterans of World War II. But you couldn't even have that conversation. You couldn't even discuss in this country whether or not that was the right decision that Truman made in World War II to drop the atomic bombs. They say, oh, no, don't go back there. You can't talk about that. They had to whitewash that exhibit. And then all they ended up doing was saying, this is the plane that dropped the bomb, and here's the mission, and here's the men that flew it, and isn't it shiny? No discussion of the context, because you can't have that conversation in America. America is not ready to look at our role in World War II and even entertain the possibility we could have approached it differently and achieved the same result. If you can't do it about World War II, we certainly can't do it about 9/11. And that's the sign that we're not a very mature country yet. And, you know, I'm okay with that. I run into people all the time that aren't able to reflect on their individual behavior. You see it in a Bill O'Reilly or a Sean Hannity or a Rush Limbaugh. They can't stop and reflect, right? If they get a caller that contradicts them, they never stop and say, you know, that's a good point. I'll have to think about that some. That happens to me all the time when I talk to people. I have to stop and say, you know, I disagree with you, but I'm going to think about that point. What you get is more bluster from them because they're fixed on their opinions, fixed in their opinions, and have no intention of looking at them or changing or adjusting them. They know they're right, so you must be wrong. And so they'll put together a verbal argument to try and pin you down and get you to admit that their, quote, facts are the right way to view the world. Well, that's not a conversation, of course. That's a one-way monologue, which is a lot of what we get in radio. In any case, the Andy Finn Show will be back after this.